Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome to your second hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by two good friends, Brian Bernadone. He's Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy with the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Elk, Director of Strategic Planning at Fulcrum, Illinois. Fulcrum, Illinois, division of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. I wanted to have both of you gentlemen in here to talk about, obviously, Tuesday's balloting for mayor of Chicago. But before we go there, you both heard Brian Mackey from public radio in Springfield and I talk about the Illinois state budget. And Eric, I was wondering if you had any quick takeaways from J.B. Pritzker's first budget.
Yeah, I think one thing that really jumps out is, you know, the $130 billion crushing pension debt that we're facing. You know, and that annual payment is approaching about $8 billion a year, which is about 20% of the budget. And would have loved to heard a little bit more about how the governor's looking to really kind of phase that down or work on that. You know, some of the budget items or the spend, some of the top things spending-wise were directly related to the minimum wage hike. And so, you know, we've really got to kind of get after that. I think it's going to set up this address sets up a really nice back and forth. It's going to start to occur here, this dialogue over the next several weeks and months. You have a number of groups out there, issues, our Ideas Illinois, that will start to put out things and kind of be the vocal opposition to what the governor's trying to do. And it'll be interesting to see the different ideas that they come up with and suggestions for this debate.
And then you also have, on the opposite side, you have Think Big, which is the...
Oh, they're thinking very big.
And that is the Pritzker-supported political action committee as well. So, right. Brian?
Yeah, I think when you're governing with a mandate, there's always a sense of urgency, but you have to be careful of not making the same mistakes, for example, that President Obama did when you come out the gate with some really explosive programs and then legislators eventually have to go home and they've got to face off against what's happening there. And I think when you listen to what the governor had to say in his speech, it's not just what he said, it's what he didn't talk about. I'm going to kind of piggyback off what Eric was talking about. I mean, the pension issue is a significant one, but there are also issues that this General Assembly is going to be taking on, such as rent control and other things that you know, the governor is going to have to be very cautious about how he approaches those issues, because the ramifications back home are pretty serious. And I think this will segue into some of the discussion we're going to have later. But the fact of the matter is we're going to go from this February-April election here in Chicago to preparations for the March primary. And that's not a long period of time. And the issues he's bringing to the table are compelling. They are personal for many people. And it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Well, and that's why I said, you know, I'm not so sure that that three-fifths vote for a constitutional amendment to authorize a graduated rate income tax is an automatic, because Democrats have those super majorities. I don't know that that's an automatic.
Well, I've long said there's a city west of Western, south of Roosevelt Road called Chicago, but there's a state outside of the city's border called Illinois, and there's some Democrats down there as well. And you got to figure out what that elasticity is for those downstate Democrats.
And the new suburban Democrats that got elected in November. And there's, as I said, there's not room for much cover here. He's got 74 Democrats, and 71 is what you need. And, you know, ideally, on a vote like that, you want to have some cover by having some Republicans join in. And that does not look like that's going to happen.
Well, and it's a tough, it'll be a tough sell, I think, for the governor. You have, you know, everyone around the state is really feeling the pinch on property taxes. And I think that, you know, in the budget address, there wasn't a whole lot laid out for any new capital spend.
There wasn't.
The last week, we saw here, looking out the window, the crack in the Lakeshore Drive Bridge. You know, there are thousands of bridges like that around the state that are in desperate need of repair. And I think that, you know, some folks may be a little bit more amenable to, you know, whether it's a gas tax or whatever the debate is, if they know that it's something they're using and going to going to help benefit them.
It's one of the few times that you do a tax increase or whatever, and you have something that's truly a tangible result that you can point to.
But Illinois voters have been sold that before, though, that we're gonna create a fund, and then, you know, for example, during the Blagojevich administration, there were fund sweeps happening. So there's,
except we have the lockbox amendment now for transportation.
There you go.
Well, but I mean, I think that
is important.
That's a significant sales point, yes. I think, for doing something.
I mean, think about it. The state borrowed $400 million last year. This budget plan for 2020 only talks about, I think, paying $85 million of it back. I mean, we've got to aggressively put things in measure to get ourselves out of this hole. And I'm not sure that the, you know, minimum wage hike and things like that, and the way the state has to account for that as well and spend, is the way to do that.
We're speaking with Brian Bernadone and Eric Elk. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Skyline Studio, the Allstate Skyline Studio, by Brian Bernadone from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. Let's shift over to what's at hand here on Tuesday. 14 people.
Should we name them all for, like, equal time?
I don't think we have enough time. Yeah, exactly. I don't think we have enough time. But I think, before we get into naming names, I think it's pretty clear we're going to have a runoff. I don't think anybody can get 50% plus one in a 14-person field.
It'll be awesome if somebody hits 15 to 20%.
I think 20, yeah. You start, yeah. 20's precipitously. Yeah. What was attainable has now slipped away because of unforced errors by prominent mayoral campaigns. You know, so we were talking very early on, I think last year, we were talking about, you know, 20% would get you where you need to be, and that number has dropped significantly since then.
Yeah, I mean, I think 15% is like the mark to try to achieve. 15, 16%.
16% I think gets you maybe number one, and you could probably sneak in with 14 for number two.
Well, you mentioned 20% being a magic number, yeah. And I think that's kind of,
no,
everybody can agree that actually the one at 20% right now is undecided.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And what is
that on the ballot?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But what does that say at this stage?
I think there's been a lot of distractions in this campaign. I mean, the analogy, I think, is the Republican primaries from 2016, where you had so many candidates out there that no one could really get a really solid grip on the message to really grab the Republican voters. And I think we're in that same frame here, where it's been lots of distractions going on between the scandals that have been going on, political or otherwise. I think it's been disjointed. I think if there's a part of frustration for me as a person who loves this city, we've had a missed opportunity here to have a real debate, a real focused debate between a narrower field to talk about the issues that are facing Chicago. I think largely we've been left with some personalities and not enough of the meat. And I know that each campaign has put out policy and things like that, but when you have so many people in the field, you end up being soundbited. And in Chicago, I think where we are as a city, where we are as a region, really deserve to have something that would elevate that discussion. That will happen more than likely in the runoff. But it's unfortunate because there are some very solid candidates in here who had some important things to say.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, you know, early on, you talk to people in the media business and, you know, they're, you know, well, should we do a debate? And it's like, you can't really do a debate, and it becomes, you know, how are you going to fix the city's crime problem? 30 seconds, go.
I mean, I think you're exactly right, but I think going back even further, one of the things I think that all of these candidates are up against is voter fatigue. You know, think about this. We're just coming off of one of the most expensive gubernatorial campaigns in the country's history, at least for Illinois, especially. And, you know, they were inundated on Hulu, on TV, on, you know, Pandora, YouTube with ads. And I think, you know, by November, folks, voters were kind of thinking, I'm over this. I'm done. I want to enjoy myself. And by the first of the year, it was right back up. I mean, they had no break.
Really, even before that.
On December,
because,
even.
You know, before the November election, we had
they were candidates
announcing, right? And you had the Mendoza, you know, kind of early release of her mayoral campaign before everybody had even voted on her, whether she should be comptroller or not.
Right. And I think, you know, to your point, the you know, the debates or forums a lot of times are a good idea. However, they do become just sound bites. You know, you have some groups who Lincoln Forum, for example, teamed up with a TV station in town to do a forum and tried to limit the number of candidates to the top five in public polling. And they were taken to court by Amar. They were sued. You know, they won, but it's crazy. You know, you try to limit it because you want to have a thoughtful discussion. In all of these debates that I followed and watched, no one really opened a new line of attack on a new candidate. It was just recycled old stuff.
Which, I mean, and let's face it, there have been countless mayoral forums held by various groups throughout the city, across the city, and it becomes almost candidates by rote. Repeating things because of, and I think in part because there were so many of those forums.
And last night, it's going to sound kind of strange coming out, but last night, before I watched Svengoolie, there's a show called The Rifle.
There it is.
I had to get it
Ding.
In. But okay. it was an interesting episode because what happened was it was about the town that fell asleep, that the marshal in that town gets elected out because everyone was at a cattle show. It's going to sound weird, but What happened in the show is all of a sudden you have this unintended consequence of what Eric was talking about with voter fatigue, and you get an unintended consequence out of it. And as a political operative, when you look at the small number that you need in order to get into that second spot, I mean, it sets up very nicely for a surprise in this thing. Political scientists will tell you when you talk about voter fatigue comes from a lot of different things. One of it is just the length of this perpetual campaign that we've been going on. But you also look at the tone of the campaigns, which have been, you know, largely negative. Those are things that diminish voter populations. So what ends up happening is where there are some strengths from different ward organizations or others that, or field operations for some of these candidates, you could see some pops. I'm still befuddled that Willie Wilson hasn't come up in some of the polling numbers there. It just doesn't seem to connect to me that a guy like Willie Wilson should have some pockets of strength that would resonate into some polling numbers. They're just not happening.
Well, and you're both familiar with polls and how polling is done, and as I've been saying, this is a race you really can't poll. I mean, you literally need a sample size of 75,000 people, which you can't afford to try to poll. But I mean, given the margins here in what we've seen in some of the numbers, you know, you with a normal sample size of maybe 600 to 800 people, 10 people can shift a front runner.
Well, and I think the way people are consuming information now and content is so vastly different than it was even 4 years ago. You know, I saw this week, you know, you have here in Chicago, the first satellite office, if you will, for Barstool Sports. They have Barstool Chicago. And Barstool Carl, an Oak Lawn guy, he sat down with Willie Wilson, McCarthy, Daly, and a few of the other candidates, which is interesting, doing these interviews, writing about them, putting the videos up. You know, you look at how many followers they have on their site and on their Twitter feeds and things like that. They are hitting a completely different segment than folks who are, you know, maybe listening to this program or watching the nightly news or something where they're running ads. So it's really interesting, people, the way people consume their content. And I think that's what candidates are constantly trying to stay ahead of and get their message to different folks.
We're speaking with Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, and Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio, joined by Eric Elk, Director of Strategic Planning for Fulcrum, Illinois, a division of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, and Brian Bernadoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. And we're talking about Tuesday's balloting for mayor. So, you know, we talked about the large undecided number. I have questions because of that voter fatigue, the voter hangover about turnout, although I guess Jim Allen over at the Chicago Board of Elections says he thinks it'll be a solid turnout. I'm not sure what that means, but I do kind of question the turnout. I'm not sure I think there's also maybe a lack of enthusiasm factor here. You know, are you hearing any core enthusiasm for a candidate?
You've got 50 aldermanic campaigns with a wide range of competitiveness going across the city. I mean, I think that as I'm looking at Eric as we talk about this, I think the crosstabs are going to be fascinating in this one, where you have competitive races on the lakefront, for example, in 49 with Joe Moore, or perhaps 47 with Jim Kappelman, or 40 with Pat O'Connor, where there's an intensity to some of those races. Where the mayoral candidates are going to break in that war,
right,
versus, you know, how the incumbents are going to do in some of those races. For example, if someone's voting for Joe Moore, are they going to be voting for Tony Preckwinkle, or are they going to be voting for Lori Lightfoot? What do those things look like? What concerns me about the turnout numbers is that I think largely in the south and the west side of the city, you don't have as many competitive races. And those are things that would generally get participation up, that there would be interest and people would be voting in those races. It doesn't feel that way. Now, on the other hand, having driven the southwest and northwest side, and while signs are not indicator of voting, they're definitely an indicator of at least organizational strength. You know, I think the southwest and northwest side, you're going to see some activity, especially in the southwest side when you start going into the areas where Marty Quinn is, where Ed Burke is. I mean, Burke, you know, if there's a prediction, I think Ed Burke wins in 14, but what's an Ed Burke voter going to do? Is an Ed Burke voter going to go with Chico? Is it going to go with McCarthy? Are they going to go with Joyce? All of them have formidable ward organizations and field operations in those wards. So I think that's going to be, you could see pockets of the city determine the next mayor rather than the whole city determine the mayor.
Well, Eric, I agree. And in fact, Brian and I talked about this, about maybe some of these candidates making the mistake that they're running a citywide campaign, when especially you can play this niche kind of game when you're talking about the low percentages that are needed for victory.
Well, I think we may end up seeing that. I think that some candidates are trying to make that play. It'll be interesting to see if it pays off. I think, to your earlier point, I think it's interesting that, there's almost right around 60,000 early votes cast so far as of around Friday. Wasn't your story, it was Bill's story, but with 13 fewer days to do the early vote than the last election. So I think that the biggest thing is how many campaigns have helped bank early votes going into Election Day, who's got the best ground game, and who's going to have the best turnout operation. And those small percentages, that's going to move the needle. And it'll be interesting to see who has the organization.
Well, there's other factors too, though. I mean, let's talk about Chicago elections. Weather. what's weather going to look like on election day?
It's going to be cold.
Yeah, it's going to be cold. 27 degrees, not to take Tom Skilling's job, but it would be cold with a chance of flurries in the morning and then clearing up an overcast in the afternoon. Those things actually matter, and which aldermen, which field teams are going to be out there getting seniors to vote? You know, how are they? Are there enough people with 14 candidates for mayor to actually cover every precinct or even every ward for some of these candidates?
Well, and you have a candidate for mayor who's also the chair of the Democratic Party of the Cook County. So how does that come into play? You know, although she just fired her campaign manager.
Well,
so,
I want to ask you both about that. And this was the result of a social media post. Scott Sizek, who Tony Preckwinkle's longtime aide, they've used a portion of a Tribune profile of Lori Lightfoot about an effort to discipline her over when she was a younger lawyer, and she said she was acting, you know, how her superiors had told her to act. And Sizek went to Facebook and put on a picture of the Nuremberg trials, and like, you know, the old Nazi, we were just following orders kind of defense, which obviously anti-Semitic, and just invoking Nazism in a political campaign is not a good idea.
No, that wasn't smart.
Does this have any, at this stage of the game, does this have any effect?
But it's also the same week you had Lori Lightfoot doing a press conference that Representative Martwick showed up to, who's a supporter of...
an ally of Tony Preckwinkle.
Of Tony Preckwinkle. And I think, and please correct me, Lori Lightfoot may have not had much coverage of what she was saying at that press conference. Representative Martwick helped her significantly and almost made her look good. The coverage ended up being the shouting match that those two got into. And I don't think that helped President Preckwinkle.
To think about something as, and I hate using the word insignificant, but that little debate actually creating a change in the polling numbers is really, really kind of disturbing to me that an incident like that can do it. But it shows how fragile these leads are for these guys. One of the things that I think is going to be a challenge, not only today, but moving past this primary for President Preckwinkle specifically, is Richard M. Daley was really smart by not taking over the party. He understood that there had to be a separation between him and the regular Democratic organization. As the regular Democratic organization of Cook County continues to be split from the inside between progressives and quote-unquote regulars, the balancing act that Tony Preckwinkle is going to have to manage, either as a nominee for mayor until April or as president of the county board, is going to be made that much more difficult. And when you have such a big organization to manage, unforced errors like what happened last week create huge problems that she really didn't need right now. I mean, her polling numbers were in the mid-20s at the beginning of this campaign and have dropped precipitously. And when you look at that and you realize that she needed to have some real positive inertia going into this, and that was taken away from her because of an error like this, you just shake your head that maybe they're managing too much at one time.
But also, as former operative, both of us, our rule is, you, as a staffer, you never end up making yourself part of the story.
That's right.
You
get quoted. I mean, that's a lesson. It's your candidate. You
that
know?
Yeah. And the message that is going out, whether, you know, is on social media or whatever, is one voice. You can amplify it or echo it, but it's one voice for that campaign. You never make the mistake of getting out ahead of your candidate.
We're speaking with Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, and Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in studio by Brian Bernadoni, Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. We're talking about Tuesday's mayoral balloting. We've covered a lot of ground here, and I guess, you know, Brian, you mentioned the possibility, given these low kind of percentages that we're expecting are going to result for the candidates, about potential surprise. Do you really think there's going to be a potential surprise that emerges?
I think if there's a surprise, you had a candidate that was at 4% on September 21st who has shown the highest amount of growth amongst the candidates and is probably at 14 or 15%, and that's Gary Chico. I think Chico is running a very solid campaign. But the other surprise I think that's coming is Lori Lightfoot. Let's see how Lori does. And where those splits are. I mean, let's go back to what we said earlier. If you look at the aldermanic wards, are people, is a Preckwinkle voter that was looking for that progressive voice and not finding it because of unforced errors going to go to Lori Lightfoot then as a backup? And does she spike in areas that no one ever got into? That mix would be a potent one. But again, there's the silent candidates in the polling numbers that you kind of worry about. And I think if people are looking past a Willie Wilson campaign, they're making a mistake. And arguably, if they're looking past Jerry Joyce, that may be a mistake as well. Jerry's got a very ample field operation, similar to what Chico's running. Those can be disruptors for guys like Bill Daley, who are spending a tremendous amount of money on advertising, but maybe not as much of an emphasis on the field. So I'm looking to see where Chico's numbers end up. I'm looking very, very closely at what Lightfoot does.
I think it'll be interesting. I agree with what you're saying, Brian, but I also think the operations, the ground game, and who's planning ahead. This could be very close Tuesday night. Who has got the bodies and the team that prepped ahead of time in case they need to have a fight at the Chicago Board of Elections?
Yeah, who's
luring up?
Right, who's got the legal team?
Yeah. Who's
right?
got a recount thing ready to go? Because those first hours and minutes are going to be really important, how they handle it and what they say.
And how likely, do you think we are that we won't know who is one and two?
It could go late.
I agree. I think, the north side count is going to be really, really interesting. You've got the 47th ward where everybody and their cousin is running for office in that ward. I mean, those are going to be really tight ones and tight counts. And, that bumps up into the mayoral count.
Well, so the weather, as was mentioned earlier, could play a role. Do they have to keep any polling stations open late? And are there any irregularities that someone, throws the foul flag on and makes this thing go a little bit later into the evening?
And especially at the ward level, I've got a note on my scratch pad that I keep in front of me on this stuff. Chicago's still the world of dirty tricks in some of this stuff, and weird things can happen in these elections, especially where you have where you have a lot of candidates. We're already seeing, signs and all the grade school stuff, the signs being removed and stuff like that. But last minute smear ads are already out the door. But those irregularities, polling boxes, missing ballots, all that stuff comes to bear. And I agree 100% with Eric. If some of these candidates aren't lawyered up, they better find them in the next 48 hours.
So, who do you think has run the best campaign? I'm not saying pick winner.
I think from a messaging standpoint, Jerry Joyce has done a very good job trying to create a narrative for him. But I think when a candidate goes from 4 to 14 or 15 with Chico, it's been a solid campaign with very few errors. Everyone else has had little hiccups or bumps along the way. Lori Lightfoot, again, you got to look at, be realistic about it, that Lori has seized upon her moment and decided to make a push at the very end. She hasn't been hit by front runner status. The mistake that was made by almost every one of the front runners was they tried to be the front runner. That should have never been part of the strategy because front runners were just getting shot at entirely by their opponents throughout this race. The people who played for second are being really smart. And again, I've enjoyed watching some of these campaigns. If they don't become mayor, you see future state's attorneys or future congressional candidates coming out of this fold.
I agree. I think that that Chico's run a really strong campaign. He wasn't out there in the front runner. I mean, he is a very capable guy, and I think he's had a really good campaign. I agree on Joyce. I think he's one of those niche candidates that potentially has really worked some of these pockets of the city. You know, same with Lightfoot. She hasn't had a lot of money, neither has Joyce, but they've still been able to figure out a way to get earned media, get their message out. You know, and you can't discount a daily. I mean, you know, the amount of money spent on TV, that still works.
The closing arguments are going to be real important. I mean, I'm interested to see what each campaign comes up with today. I know they've done their quote unquote closing argument ads and are in rally mode, but that closing argument still is pretty important. It's been interesting to watch a few of the candidates use their spouses in this race effectively. Again, Chico did it earlier on, but Joyce has done it very well. I think another thing that we're probably not tracking as well as we should is the Hispanic vote. How that comes out and where that one breaks will be very interesting. You've got Susana Mendoza and Chico both being Hispanic, and this is an opportunity for that particular community to really kind of coalesce and decide where they're going to go. Both of these candidates should do very well in those marketplaces, and it's still the emerging demographic in Chicago. So I think as observers, we haven't paid enough attention to that.
All right, gentlemen, quickly. Now, give me your two predictions.
Burke wins in 14.
And who's in the runoff?
I like Daley and Chico.
Okay.
I agree. Daley and Chico.
Okay. Well, we will keep a close eye on this. And gentlemen, you'll be back here next Sunday.
With mud on our face and everything going, we were really wrong.
As we sort through the election results. And, I mean, by that time, too, we'll have a chance to look at crosstabs and all of how this breaks out. So very, very interesting.
Yeah, the one quick point, though. The hardest thing that's going to happen after this election is, are these candidates going to be able to unify the city afterwards?
Well, yes.
And that still remains to be seen.
It's a big job.
You've got political factions all over this town, and we've got to get along at some point.
And you're going to have two finalists that get a third or less of the city vote. Gentlemen, thank you again for joining me. You're listening to The Sunday Spin. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of The Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guest, Brian Mackey, State House correspondent for NPR Illinois and WUIS-FM in Springfield. We've got Brian Bernadone was here.